refuge. Though she felt as if the world had tipped off its axis, she tried to keep her voice even as she said, "You're not old, Sally." Her grandmother gave her an indulgent smile. "Of course I am. There's no denying it. I've already lived more than the 70 the Bible promises." Though Kate was familiar with the psalm, she also knew that lifespans had increased substantially from biblical times. Not counting Methuselah, that is. "That's old-fashioned thinking," she told Sally. "Lots of people live longer than that now. And others don't." Like Grandpa Larry, who'd been less than 65 when he'd suffered a fatal heart attack. The sorrow Kate saw in Sally's eyes told her that her grandmother was remembering her husband.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Eyes on Success, followed by Men's Health at 1:30.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 57 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to show number 2302 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpey.
And I'm Pete Torpey.
It was a good run, and we were all in it for the same reasons, to make sure that we produced a great product that was going to be successful and help people get employed and get education and grow and enjoy things. And along the way, we happened to make some pretty good money for the venture capitalist.
And this week, we continue the story that we started last week with three people who made some major contributions to accessibility over the years as technologies continue to change.
We'll speak with Ted Henter, Eric Damery, and Glenn Gordon, who together were instrumental in the development and progression of JAWS over the years, as they reminisce about their contributions to accessibility. But first, for our tip of the week. Last week, we had a tip from Glenn about following your passion. This week, we have tips from Ted and then from Eric on totally different topics. First, Ted.
Because I was born and raised in Panama, and I go back there quite frequently, it's a third world country, and a lot of blind people down there, they don't have computers, they don't use JAWS, but almost anybody down there and in other less fortunate parts of the world can get a computer and can get JAWS. So I would say, go for it. Get on that computer. Don't just sit there and try to learn Braille. Get on the computer and get the product like JAWS, or of course, there's free ones out there now. But you've got to work at it and do something. Well, in my experience in Panama, there's a lot of blind people that just don't have any opportunity, but they don't take the opportunity to get on the computer.
And now Eric, speaking about another of his passions.
And my tip is, you want to slow down your backswing in golf if you want to strike the ball well.
I was wondering if now that you're retired, Eric, you were going to give us a tip about golfing, because I know you love to golf.
I'm about four rounds a week into it now and love the game. And those of you who haven't tried it, whether you're sighted or not, give it a try. It's not easy. It's a real struggle, but you're out there in the fresh air and you're walking, and anybody can play this game. The ball's not moving on you, so you just got to learn how to swing the club. And there's a lot of great blind golf people around the country, There's organizations. You can search and look into the sport. It's a lot of fun.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
APHConnectCenter.org, empowering people toward independence and success by providing blogs, information, and resources for individuals of all ages who are blind or visually impaired. Information and referral line are at 1-800-232-5463.
You are listening to Eyes on Success.
Success. Let's start by meeting Eric, Glenn, and Ted, again in alphabetical order. If you would like to hear longer introductions and learn a little more about their individual roles, listen to last week's show, which was number 2301.
Hi, Nancy and Pete. This is Eric Damery.
Hi, I'm Glenn Gordon.
I'm Ted Henter.
Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners. Underwriting pairs the impact of targeted marketing with the integrity of community goodwill.
Learn more by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is a bit more about the work environment at Henter Joyce, then Freedom Scientific, now Vispero, and about how the JAWS screen reader has had to adapt over the years to advances in computer technology, as well as to the evolving requirements of their growing numbers of users. Let's start with some reminiscences from Ted Henter.
Pete, I would like to say a few things about how much fun it was to work at Henter Joyce. We still have a mobile home at a lake near Ocala, Florida. And we'd go up there and water ski. Well, one time we had Andres, one of our programmers, a blind guy from Cuba. He was water skiing and he did a face plant where you fall face first in the water. And his glass eyes popped out. And he lost them. And they're still at the bottom of that lake, I'm pretty sure.
So to finish that story, though, Andres was here from Cuba. His wife was coming the next week, and he was all upset because he had lost his eyes. She hadn't seen him for a long time, and he managed to get new eyes in that time, in that week before she got there.
Yeah, I'm glad you added that, Eric. That's absolutely right.
I recall Christmas of 1994, the company Christmas party, we didn't have that many people in the company, but Ted and Mel opened their house up and they lined up some tables and made a big long Christmas table for dinner, and all of the staff and their families came over to their house and we had our first Christmas dinner right there in their home, and we would sit and talk, and it really was a family affair. We all worked real hard, but we felt like we worked in a real family environment, and you know, Ted's kids were popping into the office from time to time. Their math teacher, Carl Wise, got hired, put systems together, did support, ended up doing programming, and runs the engineering team today. Still, there's countless stories of people. Donnie Dunn from Oklahoma, Vietnam veteran, came in and did tech support. Donnie had no legs and no eyesight, lost both in Vietnam, and was a fantastic tech support person for a number of years working for us.
You know, it can be really fun working with a small team, and in your case, a small company, starting out on a new project. You're doing some innovative things. People all know each other. They all become very close. It's very different than working in a major corporation.
And by comparison, we're still a small company.
That's right.
By comparison to thousands of people, yes.
And, you know, I've noticed this over the years, that people that came into the business stayed in the business. They may have moved from company to company, but they remained in the industry, and we knew each other. Going to trade shows was old home week. You know, we all got to see our friends and celebrate and have dinner. We were competitors, but we were friends too.
I do want to say something, Pete and Nancy, about Jerry Bowman. He was a human resources guy from Honeywell. So he ran the company in the key time period, which would be from, I'm going to say, 93 to 2001. He was a very, very important part of the Jaws story. And he would be with us in this broadcast today, but he's kind of a behind-the-scenes type of guy, and he doesn't want to take any credit for it, but he does deserve a lot of credit for the success of the company and the product and the two guys and me that are here talking with you today.
One thing that really strikes me about, I guess it's now it's Vispero, but Henter Joyce, Freedom Scientific, all of you guys working together, is that you all seem to speak so positively of everybody else up and down the chain. And over the years of doing Eyes on Success, we've interviewed quite a few people who you've worked with at various levels in various capacities. And everybody has these great stories, you know. Everybody else was terrific to work with. And, oh, by the way, we worked hard, but we had a lot of fun together, too.
I think you're right, Nancy.
Not everybody was fun. We just don't talk about the ones who weren't fun.
Well, yeah, but overwhelmingly, it's been a very positive story that we've heard over and over.
Absolutely. And to me, when it resonates most is when someone from an unexpected quarter comes and says, you know, if it wasn't for Jaws, I would not be fill in the blank for someone's pursuit that they really love and care about. And I, for one, you know, worked on this mostly because it was just a lot of fun and I wanted to use the software. And yes, obviously helping other people was important, but I had a lot of internal motivation. And I think that's probably why when people say the kind of life-changing things that they often have, that, it really hits a positive chord.
That has to be very rewarding for all of you and the contributions you've made over the years.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So what are the biggest changes you've seen over the years? Let's talk about, first of all, a little bit about the technology and the changes, and then we can talk about sort of corporate-wide and competition, how that has changed.
So when we started, the word accessibility only meant something to either the people who needed the technology or the people who were working on the technology. Microsoft, which was still a relatively large company in 1994, had Countum One. That's one guy involved in Windows accessibility, and he was sort of their evangelist, more than anything, talking about and trying to get input from people, but they didn't have people working on accessibility. And so everything we did and all the information we gathered was because we essentially reverse engineered parts of Windows and gathered the information that we wanted. Sometimes they were using documented techniques, very often they were non-documented techniques. And even as early as the late 90s, Microsoft started working on a technology called MSAA, or Active Accessibility. And the idea there was that applications could start telling screen readers the useful pieces of information rather than causing us to have to go off and search for it. And so over the years, there have been more and more of these ways that applications and screen readers can do a dance. And the applications make certain amounts of information available. Screen readers can ask for it and present it in any number of ways. But it's much more of this back and forth than it is the going off and finding information in ways that are undocumented.
I guess back then you might not have had the relationships with Microsoft that you do these days in terms of getting pre-releases and beta copies of their software, right?
Yeah, that's probably true, but even so, the release cadence was so different. Right now, we come out with Jaws, Zoomtext, and Fusion updates every 6 weeks or so. Back then, I can't remember, Ted and Eric, you may have a better idea. I feel like we did an update once or twice a year, more often if there was a disaster, because very often we were sending it out only on floppy disks and CDs. For many years, there wasn't an active internet where everybody could download it. And so, you know, we would build up to these regular releases, and the rest of the time was fielding calls and making changes for the next big release. So it's more incremental now, and just like us, the big operating system companies and the browser companies update on a similar cadence, and so us seeing those early versions is, you know, equally important, and now fortunately they're available.
It's interesting, you mentioned the difference in distribution methods and how that made such a difference to what the customer sees. I think of particularly with hardware, it used to be if new kinds of hardware came out to do speech synthesis or screen magnification, you had to buy a whole new hardware board. And these days, that's all done over the internet with firmware updates to change how your system works.
I spend a lot less time opening up the back of his computer to change boards these days. Like none. It's great.
You know, back to the Microsoft relationship. In the 90s, there was an accessibility group. It was a relatively small group. They didn't have a lot of pull within Microsoft. It wasn't ingrained in the organization as it is today. And so that has evolved over time. And accessibility really is a part of that organization, and I think that's really helped, but it took time. There were many years where it was pretty frightening that they were going to make some change and all of a sudden we were going to be blocked out. That could have very easily happened, I think it was quite fragile back then.
Yeah, I think these days people are much more attuned to accessibility and designing for a variety of people's needs than they were, you know, a decade or two ago. People often talk about the old screen readers and the off-screen models, and these days how things are being done very differently under the hood in Windows. And I guess every time Microsoft makes a big change of their platform, it must really impact what you guys do and how you have to work with their systems.
Well, yeah, and probably the biggest one was the switch from the Windows 3.1, Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows Millennium to the things that were based on Windows NT that ultimately evolved into Windows 10, you know, passing through XP and Windows 7 and so forth. That was a major change for us. And we got wind of the fact that Social Security Administration was looking for software that ran on Windows NT. And there was only one software that ran as a screen reader in NT, and it was called ProTalk. And originally Social Security was going to use them, and then they fell out of as much favor, and so we had the option of maybe being the Social Security's possibility. And so, of course, we rushed with vaporware to show them. We showed them Windows 3.1 and said, but we can make it work on NT. And Eric, I guess you and Ted were both there, so I only was on the phone line, so maybe you can fill in the rest of the story.
Yeah, well, I had gone up there, and there was a fellow from Microsoft, I think that you alluded to, Jeff Witt, and he was in the room with the Social Security Administration people and the folks from ProTalk and the people from Microsystems that did Magic, because Magic was going to become the screen magnification software that would work with ProTalk for the Social Security Administration, and the key was they had to work together. Well, things weren't going so well, and Jeff Witt knew it, and that's when he decided to bring us into the room, and they allowed us to demonstrate, and I did a demonstration in Excel with JAWS and Magic running together on my computer, and it kind of worked, and they were impressed enough to say, let's go to the next level.
Some of these changes are hard to accommodate when someone like Microsoft makes a big change like that. Does it involve a total rewrite of JAWS, or can you patch things up?
Fortunately, we were able to take almost all of JAWS and make it work for NT. Some of that change came originally for Windows 95 and 98. So we had gotten a jump start, just as luck would have it. And then we were able to take that code and then write one layer that was NT specific and put it all together. And miraculously, it did seem to mostly work.
Yeah, and as I recall, guys, Microsystems Software, they had Magic running on Windows NT. And we got to talking to them, Eric did, and we worked out a deal. We bought that technology from them, and they worked with Glenn, and Glenn made it work with JAWS. Is that correct, Glenn?
Yeah, I had completely blocked on that. Yes, we bought some of the technology that would have been hard for me as a blind guy who couldn't run NT to develop for NT. So it was another one of those cases where the hard work of others allowed us to bootstrap and allowed me to bootstrap something that would have been hard for me to do otherwise.
Yeah.
The other technology change that was happening around that same time as NT was finding Eloquent Technologies product, Eloquence, and introducing a software synthesizer that we could ship with every license at no extra charge to the customer. And that was a significant breakthrough and really helped to expand to so many users now that didn't have the wherewithal to also buy a $1,000 synthesizer to go with their screen reader. So that was a big technology change too, and that happened right around 97.
Also building in the synthesizer into the software instead of having to buy a separate hardware device.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Eric, how did that happen? Wasn't it your wife that answered the phone or something like that?
She did. She had answered the phone and passed the call on to me. You know, we had already started working with Digital at the time, DeckTalk. They were creating Access 32, and I had spoken with them, and you know, they wanted to sell that product and still charge about $495 retail for Access 32. So that was still going to be pretty expensive. And then the other one was Russell Smith at Pulse Data, who had Kino Gold, and he had their software synthesizer, and his was going to be about $295. But when we heard Eloquence, it was just so good, at least in English. I mean, it included about five languages, but they're not that great. But for English, it was very, very good. And that really, I think, helped turn the corner for us.
And it was right around the time that hardware was getting good enough that it could support a software synthesizer. Probably 2 or 3 years earlier, it would have been much more of a reach.
So the PC processors themselves weren't powerful enough to run a speech synthesizer along with a screen reader.
Yeah, they were on the edge. And even so, you know, between the time we first introduced Eloquence and now, PCs have gotten so much faster that the benefit of a hardware synthesizer has long ago disappeared.
And as sophisticated and as well as our screen readers work these days, it seems like you're always playing catch-up, because people are finding new and different ways of using technologies. I mean, I think particularly of these web-based applications now instead of being standalone applications. And there's always some changes you guys have to make in the screen readers and what you do, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the web-based technologies, and that's something that I think folks have probably forgotten about now because it's become so commonplace. And that's the way that everybody views the web if you're using a screen reader, which is that you take a web page, but you navigate it as if it's, you know, a document in Word or a document in your favorite word processor, obviously with a lot more shortcuts. But that logic of being able to review things in a more incremental style was not how it began. When we first demonstrated Netscape would read the page from top to bottom as it populated, and you could tab, and as you were tabbing, you could hear the name of a link, and you could press enter on the link. But that was it. Right? And initially that seemed good enough because web pages were simple, and just because you could read content and navigate from one thing to the next pretty easily, that seemed usable. But clearly it wasn't by today's standards.
So there's still some challenges and work ahead.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys. This has been a fun interview, and it was great getting you all together. And again, I want to thank you for the contributions you've made to people like myself who use these tools professionally and at home.
You're welcome, Peter.
Yeah, thank you, Pete and Nancy. And we've had a relationship with you over the years because you've been part of that beta team. You've been insightful in helping us improve the product just like everyone else. And we couldn't have done it without it, without the help of all the customers.
Absolutely. Amen. Thank you both for having us on.
Thank you.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about Vispero and Freedom Scientific and their products. And for an extra treat, we'll hear Eric talking some more about golfing and how you too can get involved.
If people want to find out more about Freedom Scientific and connect with them, how can they do that?
So the Freedom Scientific website is freedomscientific.com. You can either enter that in the address bar, or any reputable search engine will take you there. I host Freedom Scientific's podcast, FSCast, and you can write to me at fscast@vispero.com.
And give people an idea of what kind of topics you cover on FSCast.
It's a combination of things about our technology and blind people doing interesting things. Very often with our technology, but not necessarily always. So a little bit like Eyes on Success. Perhaps we give you a little bit of a run for your money.
I think you do. You do a good job of hosting that FSCast.
Thank you.
Does Freedom Scientific have a social media presence?
So there's our Freedom Scientific website, which is freedomscientific.com. And we are also on Clubhouse, Facebook, Twitter. We do a bunch of Zoom events. And you can get to information about a lot of that at freedomscientific.com/training.
We actually did a show with a blind golfer. And at the end of the interview, we thought we were all done. We asked him, was there anything we missed? He says, would you like to hear about my hole in one? And so we did.
That's great.
So my question for you, Eric, I know you can run circles around people with a screen reader and your eyes closed. Can you do that golfing too with your eyes closed?
Ooh, good question.
I haven't practiced full swings. I have practiced putting with my eyes closed. It helps you train your muscles in a rhythm. That's really, you know, a blind golfer always has a sighted coach who lines them up, gives them information about what they're trying to do, and then they have to register all of that and make sure that the swing meets the objective. And it's the same thing we're trying to do with sighted persons. We don't look at the hole. We hold very still and try and swing through the ball. So I've done it. I've done some with the putter, but not with a driver yet.
Okay. Well, that's your homework.
Yes, and I've been to many blind golf events, and I am amazed. It is unbelievable to watch what some of these talented individuals have been able to do. Some of them knew how to play before they lost vision, but others did not, and it's amazing to me.
And in case you missed any of that, we'll have that in the show notes associated with this episode, number 2302, on our website at www.eyesonsuccess.net. Also, as usual, you can use the search field to look for previous interviews we've done with Ted Henter and Eric Damery and JAWS, and just put some of those search terms into our website, and you'll find those episodes along with links to the audio and show notes. And we talked about blind golfing. Yep, we've had that on Eyes on Success, too. That will also be in the show notes, and you can just put golf into the search field.
That's it for show number 2302. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with Ryan Jones, who has recently stepped up to take on the role of Vice President of Software Products at Vispero following the retirement of Eric Damery, who you heard from today, and who held that position for many years. We'll talk with Ryan about how his long career with Vispero and its predecessors prepared him for this new role and his outlook on the future of accessibility.
Well, thanks for joining us this week and over the years as we reached our millionth download late last year. And we hope you'll join us next week and continue listening to Eyes on Success.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Men's Health, followed by USA Today at 2. Here's what's happening on the Noon Book Hour. Starting Thursday, January 5th, we're reading At Blue Bonnet Lake. Marketing maven Kate Sherwood's world is fast-paced, challenging, and always changing. The last thing she wants to do is slow down to a crawl at Rainbow's End, a dilapidated resort in the Texas Hill Country. But she cannot die her ailing grandmother's request to visit the place where she and her deceased husband spent one glorious week 50 years ago. There, Kate meets Greg Vange, the resort's handyman. But there's more to Greg than meets the eye. Billions more, in fact, as he recently sold his successful software company and is at the resort in search of what's next in his life. Kate isn't looking for romance, but she can't deny the sparks of attraction that fly every time she and Greg are together. She even starts to see potential in the rundown resort. Could there be a future there? Or will Kate's long-sought promotion take her back to the big city? At Blue Bonnet Lake, starting Thursday, January 5th. The Noon Book Hour, weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 57 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to our program. My name is Peter Gilmore, and I'll be reading Men's Health magazine here on site into Sound Radio. And first up, Dwayne's World, Dwayne's World, Dwayne's World. Dwayne Johnson is entering his 50s, or what he calls his fifth level, and he's in the best shape of his life. Here he explains how he did it and why. And above all else, you should strive to be true to yourself, even if that means being a bad guy every once in a while. The Rock, or to use his given name, Dwayne Johnson, is standing in his home office in Los Angeles, a bright, inviting space in which sunlight pours through French doors. Next to Johnson is a life-size replica of a T-Rex skull, an unapologetically masculine piece of decor. Behind him on a shelf are bottles of his tequila brand, Terramana. Johnson is wearing a black Project Rock muscle tee, with tattoos creeping out of the sleeves onto his monstrous biceps. He's also wearing red shorts and occasionally grabs at his knee. Needless to say, he is in awesome shape. Johnson is fresh off the buzz surrounding Black Adam, a passion project he'd been thinking about for 15 years. It's a notable addition to his canon for a number of reasons. First, you may wonder if Johnson's too big a star for a comic book fair. Are the powers of his personality and the wattage of his charisma somehow neutered in spandex? Time will tell on that one. Second, the film required the most likable and popular actor of his generation to play an anti-hero. Finally, it also required him to get in the best shape of his life. That was our goal, for me to bring in the best physique possible, says Johnson. So the challenge with that, not only do you set the bar high, which is fine, bring it on, but then you realize you have to maintain that for months. Johnson prides himself on being the hardest worker in any room he's in. If he and Cruz were ever to share the screen, there would be a hashtag palooza. It's this ethic that keeps him at the head of the Hollywood pack for more than two decades now. As he enters his 50s, Johnson's not letting up. His day job includes finishing production on Red One, an adventure comedy with Chris Evans, as well as shooting several undisclosed movies and season 3 of NBC's Young Rock. Then there's his work with his brands, Under Armour's Project Rock, Terramana Tequila, and Zoa Energy Drinks. And he's a co-owner of the XFL, set to kick off in February of 23. All told, his net worth is a sweet $1 billion plus. At home, he's busy raising his two young daughters, Jasmine, who is 6, and Tiana, 4, with his wife, Lauren Hashin. His 21-year-old daughter, Simone, with his ex-wife and current business partner, Danny Garcia, recently signed a deal with the WWE. If anything, Johnson says this is the time when, as a man, you've got to double down on hard work. Between the rock and the hard place, perhaps. That's the uncomfortable space he's always inhabited. That's where you have to go to get results. First question, how's your day going? Just got up with the babies. Regardless of what time you go to bed, they're up. I went to bed probably around 1, 1:30 as I normally do. Babies had me up at 6 a.m. I'll go train next. Let's start with Black Adam. What excited you about the role? It's been 15 years since we first started talking about Black Adam. It's been about 7 years since we all agreed. Seven Bucks Production and Warner Brothers and DC that we were going to make Black Adam. What excited me about it was delivering a character in the superhero genre that has never been seen before. No actors have played Black Adam. In addition, but more important, is the opportunity to disrupt the superhero genre. You have a character like Black Adam, who is, depending on how you interpret his philosophies, he's a superhero, an anti-hero, or just a bad dude. Now the difference is in Superman. There's a code of ethics that Superman abides by, which is why he is the greater superhero. Superman won't kill anyone. Black Adam, on the other hand, you can't finish your sentence if you mean harm to him or his family. Did you have any internal conflict about playing against public perception? The Rock. I've identified so deeply with Black Adams. Yes, he lives in a gray area, but his philosophy is black and white. If you hurt the ones I love or my country, you're going to pay. And there's no questions asked. There's no bringing you to justice. There's no apprehending you. You die. What also was very appealing to me, and I think will appeal to a lot of people, is that you can't put him in a box. You can't say, you have to be like this. You can't do this. You have to do that. I felt like I experienced that throughout my career when I first got to Hollywood 20 years ago. You can't call yourself The Rock. You can't talk about pro wrestling. You can't be this big. You can't work out as much. Change your diet. Lose weight. If you want to be like Will Smith, Johnny Depp, George Clooney, who were the stars at the time, this is how you have to be. Well, I tried that for a few years. Then I finally said, man, the heck with this. I can't be like that. I'm not those guys. I can never be those guys. I'm not in a box. Don't tell me how to be. I'm going to be myself. Did you have to train even harder to fill out the Black Adam costume? We did. My goal was to bring in the best physique of my career. That includes my years as a football player and a pro wrestler. I've worked with Danny Rinzi, my trainer, very closely now for over a decade. The real challenge was to maintain that physique for months. It's not, all right, go after it and grit and grind it out. No, you can't do that because your body can't sustain it and your body will break down, whether you're in your 20s or 60s. So we had to really approach it with care and science. And Danny was there throughout the shoot and constantly looking at my body, seeing how it was coming along. How's my sodium intake? How are the carbs? There's just so much you have to look at. Now what's interesting is we could have said, the heck with this, put the muscle pads in the suit, as they normally do. And it's not a knock to my friends at all. But I felt like, let's be disruptive. Let's do it different. Let's take on all the muscle pads out, which we did for Black Adam. When he had that suit on, every detail shows. Man, it was constant work, constant tweaking, tweaking, tweaking for months. You've turned 50 in May. How are you feeling about that? There are markers you have in your life. As dudes, you hit your 30s. Like to think you've got your stuff together. You generally have no idea. You're trying to work your stuff out. And you're trying to fake it till you make it. That kind of thing. Yet your 40s, hopefully, you're starting your family. You're getting settled, feeling comfortable. And then you're going through a lot in your 40s too. I wanted to hit the fifth level in my rhythm and groove. What I mean by that is that my body was in a great place, so it wasn't too banged up. So really, in my 30s and 40s, when I was coming off of my wrestling, I was still feeling the effects of all my wrestling injuries. At 40, I said, okay, I'm going to spend the next decade training as smart as I can, balancing out training and family and work. Being an open sponge, learning every day, but also not worrying about ego training, not worrying about the weight that I put on at the bar, pushing myself so hopefully by the time I hit the fifth level, my joints are feeling great and I'm still able to not only maintain, but add real muscle and some really dense muscle. That's a long answer to tell you that I'm feeling good. Has your diet changed? My philosophy is to eat clean and make sure that my diet is commensurate with my goals, which stay consistent throughout the year. It's better to stay in shape than to get in shape. I'm a real creature of habit. I usually eat the same thing every day for days, weeks, and months. It's very consistent. It's also very boring. It's also extremely disciplined. That's something I picked up from my old man, who was a hardcore gym fanatic. He taught me very early on not to eat to please the tongue, but to eat to nourish the body. He taught me that when I was 5. That's probably why I need therapy. So what's your breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Well, I eat 6 meals a day. And they're all similar in terms of nutrients. Breakfast consists of eggs, a meat like bison, a complex carb like oatmeal, and fruit. Usually either papaya or blueberries. My second meal, around 10 a.m., usually consists of a chicken breast, complex carb like rice, and some greens. And dinner is fish or chicken, a complex carb like sweet potatoes, and some greens. You count your macros, right? In a very specific way, yes. I have a strength and conditioning coach. I have a nutritionist. I also have a lead chef advisor who speaks to a lot of the chefs I work with because I'm often in different locations. So work out all that math and they extrapolate. They're much better and smarter at it than I am. I do see results quickly when I adjust the macros. The range, protein, 40 to 45%, carbs, 40 to 50%, fats, 15 to 20%. We've got it down to a science where we fine-tune the macros. I never feel hungry. That's a key. Training and dieting down for a goal requires discipline. You can often feel hungry. How has your training evolved? I still train with the same intensity. I'd like to think I train smarter. When I was 25, I was doing Olympic lifts, which are tough on the joints with the torque. I actually train shorter, but I get more out of it. What I've also been able to do with experience is listen to my body. You know, there's a difference between pain that you can work through, and that's good to work through, and the pain where you have to stop what you're doing and take care of that particular part of your body that hurts. I need to take a break here to remind you that you're listening to Men's Health Magazine on Sight Into Sound Radio. You can listen to Sight Into Sound on channel HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as on Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at sightintosound.org. We are Sight Into Sound Radio since 1967. Now back to Dwayne's World. With great power comes great responsibility. You have 340 million followers on your Instagram craving your fitness content. Is that exhausting? It's a blessing. I have trained long enough to know that there are some good takeaways that I could share that could help my audience in their fitness and wellness journey. One of the responsibilities, though, is to make sure that the things I'm posting are smart training-wise, not dumb stuff that'll get you hurt. Guys do that all the time, and they train out of ego. They train to get views. You see them doing crazy exercises. Some are very entertaining, but some are pretty dangerous, too. I think it's really important to make sure you don't lose the integrity of why you're in the gym to begin with. You're in the gym to build your muscles, or whatever your goal is. Usually, when I do post training, it's toward the end of my workout or my final set. I don't do anything in between. I get in the gym and don't mess around. Training isn't just about physical strength. How does it affect you mentally? Psychological nourishment. I really feel that there are fundamental skills you learn in the gym in terms of discipline, working through your fatigue, pushing past what you perceive as a limit. Because there's the greatness on the other side. There are little achievements along the way that you're going to gain from. Big achievements, too. Now, you've experienced depression. Does training help you manage that? I think so. Sure. During those times where I fell into, was challenged by depression, the gym became my best friend. And I know it's like that for a lot of people. You're able to go to the gym to sweat out the toxins and get a little bit more clarity when you walk out the door. It doesn't fix the problem, but it helps. Over the past few years, you've opened up more about your spirituality and your mana. How does that help you? So, I'm half black and half Samoan. And on the Samoan side, there's a Polynesian word called mana. Really what it means is like energy, a force, a power that we all have, and it's ever-existent in our world. When I talk about mana, it's a feeling that I get that's just here deep in the DNA. And you can get it when you walk into the gym. You can feel the mana. It can be quite palpable. Is that something you try to tap into daily? Or you just feel it? For me, mana becomes my daily anchor. And it's a reminder of my cultures. It's a reminder of who I am. It's a reminder to work hard, to be humble, to show gratitude. And it's a reminder to always connect with people. Like we could be connected through mana. It's very powerful. Do you feel like you're connecting with your spiritual side more now? Well, I've always been connected to my cultures, my family, and my ancestors. But as you go down the road of life, you start to get more connected with your spirituality in that kind of way when you start to realize what mana actually means. Does anything scare you? The thing that keeps me up at night is just how everything shakes out. The things we've planned. The things I can control. Making the right moves. Thinking about my family, my babies, all the other stuff that's going on. Once I get everybody to bed, there's a window of about 2 hours when the whole house is quiet, where I do most of my thinking, and where I can accomplish most of my thoughts from beginning to end. Then I go to sleep with the usual clarity. Tequila helps too. You have a lot going on. How do you prioritize and find balance? I prioritize things by asking, do I love them? Am I passionate about them? They could be big things. They could be little things. But either way, whatever they are, they don't get me out of bed. And if I'm not running toward those things, then I don't do them. That's how I prioritize things. How I find balance is by making sure that I still maintain in touch with the simple core things that are important to me. Life could get crazy and funny for all of us, but especially when you get a little bit of fame, things have a tendency to go sideways. I'd like to be able to stick to the simple core things that keep me stable. Communication is really important too, right? Oh man, I think one of the defining moments in my life was when I really realized the power and the value of asking for help. Vulnerability. You know, really kind of checking your ego at the door. As guys, we have a tendency to not ask for help. Ego gets in the way. We start stuffing things deep down in our guts, which is not a good thing. I become an advocate for asking for help. It wasn't always like that, and it's much easier said than done. I grew up an only child. I was that guy who would stuff things down and not talk about them. I'd figure it out all by myself. Most of the time, I did figure it out all by myself, but also just took a toll, man, on my soul and on my mental health. So these days, I'm a big advocate of asking for help. Also, I've lost friends who've checked out and, yeah, ended their lives because they didn't want to ask for help. Yeah, so you got to communicate. You got to ask for help. There's no shame in that. If you don't know something, ask. If you don't know, ask. How Dwayne Johnson stays forever fit. When Johnson hit his mid-40s, he started changing his gym tactics. The wear and tear in the joints, it catches up with you, says his longtime trainer. To keep Johnson in anti-hero shape, the trainer implements these four strategies in his routine. Number one, pre-exhaust. Johnson doesn't want to train ultra heavy, so he makes lighter loads challenging. He'll often do a set of isolation moves, say a chest cable fly, then immediately follow up with a compound move, say a bench press. This iso move leaves his chest fatigue, making the compound move harder, even with a moderate weight. Two, do glutes for days. We really prioritize training the posterior chain. Johnson does Romanian deadlifts 2 or 3 times weekly in order to attack his back muscles, glutes, and hamstrings. Glute muscles help protect the lower back and keep him explosive. Three, squat late. Most lifters do squats early in their workout. Johnson often does them in the last move of leg day. That means his leg muscles are already burned out from the other lifts, like those Romanian deadlifts, so he can tax his quads and hamstrings with a moderate weight. And finally, slow it down. During at least 2 moves in every workout, Johnson concentrates on time under tension. He'll grab a moderate weight for, say, a bicep curl, then curl up, squeeze his bicep, and slowly lower the weight for 4 seconds. 35-pound dumbbell curls with a 4-second negative for 10 reps is a brutal exercise. Johnson does 3 to 4 sets. Enjoy the burn. Now return to the article, What Fit Guys Really Eat. First, the figure skating program manager making small meals. The guy, Ian Katinga, 45, is a Google program manager and a competitive figure skater. The challenge, a skate work, gym, work routine that demands all-day fueling, with a target protein count of 100 to 150 grams daily. The solution? Three small meals and two or three snacks a day. They can't be boring, he says, so he leverages his Filipino heritage and some nearby Cambodian restaurants. For lunch or dinner, he'll modify singang, a Filipino tamarind-based sour savory pork stew, by dropping the pork and adding extra okra, water spinach, or kale. He'll also have chicken thighs and a cup of rice. For snacking, he'll pick up some chicken skewers and ground pork dip at a Cambodian restaurant. He learned to eat small meals to take off the pandemic pounds. At first, eating less more often seemed daunting. Then he discovered that he liked it. I'm not full. It allows me to blast through my workout instead of starting out strong and tapering off. Next, the bodybuilding lawyer, leaning on meal prep. The guy, Jared Foley, 40, is a lawyer and amateur bodybuilder, most recently on the podium of the National Physique Committee's 2022 championships. The challenge, eating every 3 hours during a heavy workout. The solution, meal prep. Foley cooks for an hour on Sunday, packing everything for the week to containers he can take to the office. In each meal, he has about 8 ounces of protein, grilled chicken or tilapia, 8 ounces of white rice, and 4 ounces of vegetables. Yes, he does it all in an hour. How Foley meal preps. Order your ingredients. Rather than hauling all that food from the grocery store to his home in Brooklyn, Foley orders cooked protein from Eat Clean Bro, an online meal prep company, then makes enough rice for his meals at work to last the week. The exception to that system, fish, which doesn't hold up like the other proteins do. Instead, he buys uncooked fish, freezes it, and then cooks it quickly himself a few days a week. And he befriends the fire. Hot sauce bursts up the boredom of eating the same thing every day. There's a world of varieties out there that bring more than just heat. Try heatnist.com, which offers subscription boxes featuring hot sauces ranging from garlic-infused to everything bagel. The competitive cyclist chef using liquid fuel. Matthew Aquino, 45, is a chef at a Michelin star restaurant, SPQR, and the weekend pop-up Acerino's Coffee and Donuts, both in San Francisco. As a competitive cyclist, he's racked up some 12,000 miles this year and 1 million feet of elevation. The challenge, to support this kind of training volume, he needs nutrients and also calories, calories, calories. The solution? Liquids contain easily digestible carbs or protein. Though he has raced competitively on and off throughout his life, he hit a fitness plateau 6 years ago. I realized I wasn't eating well enough. Not in terms of quality, but quantity, he says. The fix involved making food like date-studded rice cakes for the start of a long ride and turned to high-calorie drinks mixes toward the end. I basically train on maple syrup, he says. He stays fueled in between with protein drinks. Well, we have come to the end of our program. I've been reading Men's Health magazine. I'm Peter Gilmore. And this has been a production of Sight in the Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, Sean Connery stars in Goldfinger.
Stop! Look! He's gunning for trouble. 007. It spells... Bond.
Shocking.
He's the idol of every woman.
Who?
James Bond.
The envy of every man. The nemesis of the treacherous Mr. Goldfinger.
Goldfinger!
Goldfinger, a crowned and thrill-leading cinema entertainment.
The man with the mind.
A three-time winner for Fleming's Secret Agent 007.
name is Pussy Galore.
Isn't it customary to grant the condemned man his last request?
You've asked for this.
Come and purr over Honor Blackman as Pussy Galore. The female who is all feline. Also starring girl.